We are here to abet creation and to witness to it, to notice each other's beautiful face and complex nature, so that creation need not play to an empty house. Now let us begin in song. Every heart here carries its own individual story into this community at this time. We all have our cracks, and we bring those too. Into this community, which is like a chalice with very wide arms to hold us all, I invite you now, during this time of silence, to settle comfortably into this beautiful chalice of a community that we have all created together this morning, and fill it with whatever your heart needs to let go of, whatever your mind needs to let go of at this time. We enter into a 2-minute time of silence. How many of you have received one of those Christmas letters that brag about the accomplishments of the sender and their children? You know what I'm talking about. Maybe, like me, you've even been known to send one. Well, for example, here's how one might go. Mary is at Harvard. Sarah is making $400,000 a year in Silicon Valley. Joan and Phil have a $5 million home in Malibu. And the dog won a blue ribbon at the state fair. Wouldn't it be refreshing if instead the letter went something like this? Mary just flunked out of Harvard. Sarah was making $400,000 a year in Silicon Valley until her dot-com company went belly up. Joan and Phil's $5 million home in Malibu is slipping into the ocean. And the dog did what dogs do. We're still trying to get the stain out of the rug. How tempting it is to mention only our successes. I certainly neglected to mention my son's dropping out of college in that year's Christmas letter, or to mention the job I didn't get in another year. Well, I want to make a confession this morning. I'm not perfect. To name just one little proof of my imperfection, 4 years ago, I mailed out 197 invitations to my ordination. My list included none other than the president of the Unitarian Universalist Association and other dignitaries from Boston and elsewhere. All 197 were reminded of my imperfection by, and as a former editor, it pains me to utter this word, a typo. All ministers, seminarians, and denominational officials are requested to arrive early for robing. I, English teacher and proofreader par excellence, failed to notice this big capital N in the middle of the word denomination until the invitations were printed. I decided I didn't have to look at the galleys because I was in a hurry. Well, needing to get them out quickly and lacking unlimited funds, I chose not to reprint them, but to send them out, capital N, wart and all. As embarrassing as my typo was, it can't hold a candle to one committed by a good friend of mine. He and his fiance had decided to print their wedding vows on their announcement. Well, instead of promising to persevere, the printer had them promising to perverse. Well, that's a new verb even to me, but it has possibilities. I don't know whether this typo was a self-fulfilling prophecy, but the marriage only lasted a few years. Well, at least I didn't produce an entirely different word with sinister implications, just an obvious garden variety typo. In the course of agonizing over what to do, it occurred to me that maybe there was a gift here in the form of a lesson, one of those growth experiences that life passes along. Well, in fact, there were probably several lessons. One gift of my typo experience was the reminder, born of 16 years of work in a 12-step program, that How others respond to me is their problem, not mine. There's a wonderful pamphlet that's entitled, Your Opinion of Me is None of My Business. I can't control another person's response to me. I can choose, however, to respond in a way that enhances my own growth. So after beating up on myself a bit, I remembered one of my Al-Anon slogans, How important is it? Well, this slogan may not sound like earth-shaking wisdom. In fact, it isn't. It's more like earth-bound wisdom. How important is it is grounding wisdom. It's an example of what I mean by the spirituality of imperfection. Now, there may be some, even in this room, who are suspicious of the term spiritual and spirituality. I've never been in a UU congregation yet that didn't have a few folks who felt that way. And actually, I understand that feeling. But I think that this suspicion of the term spiritual stems from a misunderstanding about the meaning of spirituality, which has an unfortunate grip on Western culture. The idea that spirituality is somehow special and otherworldly. Of this sort of spirituality, I too am suspicious. I once saw a sign in a New Age bookstore that read, Spirituality spoken here. And I was tempted to ask the clerk to say something in spirituality. It irritated me because the sign seemed to imply the existence of a special insider's language, a kind of jargon of the spirit. But those of us who have studied Latin will remember that the English word spirit comes from the Latin spiritus, which means breath, air, or life. What could be more essential than breath, more common than air, more messy than life? When I hear someone say, I'm not spiritual, I assume they mean it in the otherworldly, New Age, woo-woo sense. Because the way I'm using the term, every human being is spiritual by virtue of living and breathing. Spirituality is a lot like health. We can't avoid having it. We may have good health or poor health. Likewise, our spirituality may be negative, leading to isolation and self-destruction, or it may be positive and life-affirming. The popular conception of spirituality tends to equate it with perfection, not imperfection. My title, which was, by the way, stolen from an excellent book about storytelling, was meant to capture your attention with an apparent paradox. I say apparent because the spirituality of imperfection is a tradition at least as old as that of equating spirituality with perfection. This tradition, the spirituality of imperfection, can be traced back 2,500 years to the pre-Socratic philosopher Heraclitus in the West and to the Tao Te Ching in the East. The spirituality of imperfection lives today in, among other places, baseball. As former baseball commissioner Francis T. Vincent Jr. observed, baseball teaches us how to deal with failure. I guess any Red Sox fan knows that. Baseball, alone in sport, considers errors to be part of the game, part of its rigorous truth. An unfortunate misconception in Western spirituality has arisen from a single line in Matthew's Gospel, which attributes to Jesus the injunction, Therefore be perfect as your heavenly Father is perfect. Without getting into the intricacies of historical Jesus scholarship, I'll just say that this line was almost certainly not uttered by Jesus of Nazareth, but rather by Matthew more than 50 years after the crucifixion. But no matter whose idea it was, it has inflicted a lot of damage. Many feel deep guilt over their inability to live up to this injunction. Be ye therefore perfect. John Sanford, an Episcopal priest and Jungian analyst, offers the following critique of Matthew's verse. There's probably no saying of Jesus subjected to more abuse than this one. The very way in which it is translated into our English Bible does violence to its profound and paradoxical meaning. You must therefore be perfect, he says, brings to our minds the image of abiding by a perfectionist moral code that allows no shadow, no taint of impurity or imperfection. Well, never one to shrink from a challenge, I decided to explore the profound and paradoxical meaning of this line. And I decided to write a paper in seminary explicating the verse, attempting to salvage from it some core of truth. Don't worry, I'm not going to read my paper this morning, but I will briefly summarize my findings. I make no claim to be a Greek scholar, but I learned from my New Testament teacher how to delve into the text using interlinear translations, dictionaries, and concordances. Anybody can do it, really. If you just have to get the right books or go to the library, they're there. I discovered that Matthew's Greek word, which is usually translated as perfect, is the word teleios, T-E-L-E-I-O-S. The only word I can think of that derives from that is teleology. Not exactly an everyday household word, but elsewhere in the Greek Old and New Testaments, this same word, teleios, is used to mean whole, complete, mature, which is anything but flawless. I examined the line in its context within Matthew. I noticed that it comes at the end of a fairly long passage that begins with that famous line, "Love your enemies," a paradoxical statement, if ever there was one. The motivation this passage offers for loving your enemies is so that you may be children of your Father in heaven, for he makes the sun to rise on the evil and the good and sends rain on the righteous and the unrighteous. And we'll just have to allow Matthew his little gender exclusiveness there. The translation of teleios as perfect sounds especially suspect in this context. Impartial, tolerant, compassionate, all would seem better terms to describe the behavior of God, which Matthew is asking us to emulate. I proceeded to look at some more recent, more modern translations of this line. The "be ye therefore perfect" basically comes from the King James Version. Several versions rewrite the line altogether rather than substituting a single word for perfect. One such translation reads, "Be unstinting in your generosity, in the way your heavenly Father's generosity is unstinting." Well, this translation makes good logical sense in the context of God's impartial sending of sun and rain, but it sounds awkward and lacks dramatic impact. I don't know about you, but that word unstinting just doesn't ring my chimes. Another translation rewrites the line in this way, "There must be no limit to your goodness, as your heavenly Father's goodness knows no bound." Again, prosaic, though perhaps accurate. One commentator offers what may be the best translation that I found. "You are to be all-embracing in your love, in imitation of God, whose love embraces all." I really like that translation, but perhaps it's the English teacher in me. Something wants me to find a single word to replace that word perfect. It's a poetic rhetorical urge to fill something in there. So I came up with the following translation. I should tell you that the word "therefore" in Greek has umpteen meanings. It doesn't necessarily have the same logical meaning. It has way more meanings. So I took it to mean "in this manner." So in this manner, the way of loving enemies, you will become whole. I especially like the word "whole" because it's such a perfect foil for the word "perfect," especially in the Jungian context, which sees wholeness and perfection as mutually exclusive. The idea of embracing the whole is the essence of a spirituality of imperfection. And it begins with embracing ourselves, accepting our shadow sides, loving the enemy within, which is the first step toward loving our projected enemy. Truly loving ourselves requires a deep honesty about our imperfections. This spirit of deep honesty is captured by a Hasidic tale. Three youths hid themselves in a barn on a Sabbath in order to smoke. They were discovered by community members who threatened to flog them. One youth exclaimed, "I deserve no punishment, for I forgot that today is the Sabbath." The second youth said, "And I forgot that smoking on the Sabbath is forbidden." The third youth raised his voice and cried out, "I too forgot." "What did you forget?" he was asked. The lad replied, "I forgot to lock the door." Deep honesty. No excuses. No whining. The simple, rigorous truth. These are the essential elements of a spirituality of imperfection. Another essential element is tolerance. I've heard it said that tolerance is an insufficient virtue, that we must not only tolerate, but love, embrace, and celebrate one another. This may be true, but let's not sell tolerance short. It's easy to gloss over the step of tolerance and jump into a fleeting feel-good moment with other people. But tolerance is something deeper, something more long-lasting than this. In fact, one of the synonyms of the word tolerance is endurance. It implies a commitment for the long haul. Tolerance is not a grudging putting up with the way we sometimes use it in popular lingo. Tolerance is a loving identification with someone. Tolerance is the glue that holds a community together. The combination of honesty and tolerance is an essential prerequisite for a religious community. It's our weaknesses that make us alike. It's our strengths that make us different. The honest sharing of weakness creates true community. In such a setting, I can learn to appreciate rather than resent the strengths of others, because I know that at bottom, we are the same, flawed and imperfect. With shared weakness as our common bond, we can truly rejoice in one another's strengths. And this may not come easy to Unitarian Universalists. We don't like to admit that we have any weaknesses. We're the great scholars. We're the great intellects. Our kids make the best SAT scores. But guess what, folks? We still have a lot of weaknesses, and it's okay. In fact, it's more than okay. It's wonderful. There are three homophones. Pardon me, another English teachery word. That just means words that sound alike but have different spellings and different meanings, that I'm very fond of. H-O-L-Y, W-H-O-L-L-Y, and H-O-L-E-Y. To be holy, H-O-L-Y, is to be holy, entirely ourselves, which is to admit that we are H-O-L-E-Y, full of holes. Genuine holiness consists of enduring our own imperfections and those of others. When I extol the glories of imperfection, someone inevitably asks if I'm advocating incompetence. Well, the answer is yes, but I'd better quickly clarify what I mean by incompetence. Part of the dysfunction of Western culture is the belief that worth and meaning reside in external definitions of competence. The problem with such external definitions is that they invite an emphasis on appearances and on maintaining the status quo. Keeping up appearances produces anxiety, and it stifles creativity. It stifles life. Personal excellence and relevance are healthier standards than competence and perfection. Personal excellence and relevance are healthier standards than competence and perfection. This is especially true in ministry, where the lure of pleasing people is strong. Ministers are called, however, not only to comfort the afflicted, but also to afflict the comfortable. not my phrase. I'm not sure who it originates with, but preachers love to quote it. Sometimes a congregation system needs to be challenged in order to attain maturity, growth, and integrity. Both individuals and systems need to own and embrace their shadow sides if we are to fulfill our potential for excellence. Another paradox. The good news is that excellence does not require perfection, just like wholeness does not require perfection. Imperfection is one of the qualities that endears me to Unitarian Universalism. Our movement has no dramatic, poetic liturgy to repeat, no clear, unchanging set of moral imperatives. We revise our covenant about every 20 years or so. And by the way, Thomas Jefferson thought the whole Constitution should be revised every 20 years. Wine or incense. We do like candles. We're very fond of candles. We don't come here to be saved unless it is from isolation or narcissism. We don't come here because we're afraid we'll go to hell if we stay home. We come here because we want to. It's that simple. I know it's risky to presume why any of you come here. We each have our own reasons. But one reason I suspect many of us share is simply to be ourselves. I can be more myself in a group of people who are committed to honesty and tolerance. Because you all serve as loving mirrors, simultaneously revealing and disregarding my imperfections. It would be wonderful if our real mirrors would disregard some of those. We come to share our life journeys, and life is filled with vicissitudes. It's an open-ended, messy, disjointed affair. My life may not be neat, my progress rarely straightforward, but it's my life, and I'm proud of it. In the words of G.K. Chesterton, if a thing is worth doing, it's worth doing badly. May the spirit of honesty and tolerance prevail in this community, and may we learn to love our imperfections. May it be so, and blessed be.